This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Parti Socialis Malaysia, or PSM, was registered by its founding members on the 30th of April 1998, though it was only formally registered 10 years later. But from 1998 itself, they have been at the forefront in fighting for the rights of the working class, including on issues like housing for all, rights for workers and decent living wages, even on topics like climate change and renewable energy, quality and affordable healthcare, and so much more. Though faring not so well at GE14, the party continues to advocate for and help marginalised communities in Malaysia. So in a belated nod to International Workers' Day, joining me today is Dr. Jayakumar Devaraj, the chairperson of Parti Socialis Malaysia and the former two-term MP of Sungai Siput, to discuss more about what the party does to help the working class community and also to discuss their plans for the future. Welcome, Dr. Jayakumar. How are you today?
I'm fine, Juliet.
Thank you so much for joining us. So, you know, let's just get straight to it. You know, in addition to being, as I mentioned, the former two-term Sungai Siput MP, you are, of course, the chairperson of PSM. Can you talk to me a little bit about the formative years of your politics, you know, before we start discussing PSMs?
Okay. Actually, I come from a middle-class, liberal Christian family. My mother was quite a committed Christian. But in a liberal way, the liberal sometimes is taken as a bad word in Malaysia nowadays. But by this, it means that though a devout Christian herself, she saw that other religions are also, for her, paths to God as well. And she respected other religions. So there was no arrogance that my religion is better than yours. And she brought up with that kind of a culture. And she instilled in all her children a sense of service, a sense of stewardship that, you know, if you are given intelligence, you're given knowledge, if you're given wealth, a large portion of it should be used to help your fellow men, especially those who are in need. Mm-hmm. And that was really kind of instilled deeply into our value system. So I think my becoming a socialist and being in the Socialist Party stems from that, the idea of service to others.
And speaking of service to others, you're actually a medical doctor by profession, right? What sort of, you know, led you to politics? You know, did you see that as possibly a role that can improve lives?
Surely, yeah. I mean, even as a medical doctor, you work within a system. Mm-hmm. What kind of healthcare system do you have? How much funding does it have? How much of privatization do you allow? And those things are all political, really, you know. So as a doctor, you have technical skills, but the system within you work is determined by the political discourse in the country, how resources are allocated, what kind of policies and systems are set up. Politics is the overarching thing, you know. Mm-hmm. It determines the structures within which we work.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, since we're talking about the Socialist Party today, I mean, there's actually a lot of confusion about what socialism is, right? I mean, if we look at the US, the 2020 US elections, gosh, the conservative leaders were making it out to be this sort of democracy-killing boogeyman. You know, it was like the evil thing. But, you know, as far as you're concerned, could you explain both what socialism is and what it isn't?
Okay. You know, if you look at our society today, we are in the most productive society that mankind ever has had. We can produce so many goods and services. Yet there's so much want, there's so much unemployment in many parts of the world. And almost 50% of the people in the world don't have their basic needs met. At the same time, our environment is in crisis. There's a climate crisis. There's global warming. You know, we're really heading for disaster there. And the third thing is there's so much of corporate control over politics. In many countries, the democratic process has been usurped by money, by the richest people. So basically, socialism is about redressing, rebalancing all these things. Mm. And we believe we got to do that by reducing the power, the influence of the richest 1%. And we do that by empowering the bottom 99% to take part. So that basically is what socialism is. How do you manage the current economy, the current productivity of the world in a way that benefits the majority? And we think for that, we got to dethrone the profit motive. It can't be the dominant thing. We got to put people before profits. So you're talking in terms of a better distribution of the wealth that we're creating, making society more democratic, that people have a say in their local government, they have a say in their place where they work, they have a say in actually choosing the government, and the governments are not beholden to corporate interests. Recognizing climate change, These are the main things that I think socialists of the 21st century should look at. This is what we should look at. And what we are not is we're not for a totalitarian state. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are the opposite. We want a democratic state. We want society within the bottom 99% to have their say. And we are not actually anti-market. I think the market has been there even before capitalism, mm-hmm. and the market serves a purpose. But we cannot have the profit motive dominating everything as it is now. And so I think socialism is basically saying you need to put people before profits. And how do we do that in a humane way, in a way that democratizes society, in a way that is sustainable to our environment? So that's what socialism of 21st century is,
yeah. You know? And it's about, and it's not also about equality, is it? It's about equity.
That's right. I think not talking about complete equality, but I think people need, I think right now some people are so marginalized. We've got to address that, you see?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it was, of course, Workers' Day. It was May Day, right, just last week. It was also Karl Marx's birthday yesterday, coincidentally. And it was on the 30th of April, the unofficial birthday of PSM. So the party was actually registered by its founding members on the 30th of April, 1998. Can you take me back to the start? You know, how did the party come about? You know, why did the party see a need to form a political party?
Okay, you know, about 5-6 years before 1998, a few NGOs were working with estate workers and with the urban pioneers, you know, so-called squatters. We came together to form some national campaigns, you know, like for estate workers, we wanted monthly wages, we wanted better schools, we wanted better housing scheme for estate workers. And for the Penaroka Banda, the urban pioneers, we wanted their land issues to be resolved. So we had national campaigns where we presented the demands of these groups to various political parties and government leaders. And then along the way, we felt that actually there isn't that much of sympathy or that much of understanding in the existing political parties, whether government or opposition, regarding these kind of issues. And then the idea came that we need to send our own people to legislature, to the Dewan Undangan Negeri, to the parliament, to bring up these issues, because we felt that these issues were not properly canvassed. Mm. And we said that not enough just being, you know, mobilizing from the ground, we also got to get inside these legislative halls, and we can also try and form policy. Mm. So that's where the idea came from. There's not enough to just, you know, mobilize grassroots, but you also got to get, you know, representation inside. That's how the idea came.
And you tried to get registered in 1998, but it actually took 10 years before it actually happened. You know, what happened? Why were you not allowed to register for those 10 years?
Okay, we applied in 1998. At the time, you know, Mahathir was the prime minister and Badawi was the home minister, and they turned us down with all kinds of funny excuses. They said the special branch found that we were a security threat and stuff like that. So finally, we had to take them to court. Mm-hmm. So we took the Home Minister, Badawi, and the government, Home Ministry, to court. And along the way, then Badawi then became the Prime Minister. The case went on. We went up to the appeal court. And then after 2008, it was already Naljib was the Prime Minister. And after the elections, the Home Minister then offered that they would register us if we withdrew the court case. So that's what we did. We withdrew the court case and we got registered.
Okay.
So basically, it was an antipathy of the government to anything about socialism, you know? Yeah, the term itself.
Yeah, much like we see across the world. I'm speaking today to Dr. Jayakumar Devaraj. He is the chairperson of Parti Socialist Malaysia. He's also the former two-term MP of Sungai Siput. And we're discussing Parti Socialist Malaysia. You know, we're looking at the past, what they're doing now, and also what their plans are for the future. And coming up, we're still going to find out a little bit more about what they did in those 10 years between getting formally registered. And that's coming up after this quick break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and joining me on the line today is Dr. Jayakumar Devaraj. He's the chairperson of Parti Socialist Malaysia. He's also the former two-term MP of Sungai Siput. And today we're discussing, Parti Socialist Malaysia, because it was their unofficial anniversary on the 30th of April, which was last week. It was also Workers' Day. So we're just kind of looking at what, you know, Parti Socialist is up to, what they're fighting for and what they stand for. So before the break, Dr. Jayakumar, you shared, you know, why it took 10 years to be registered. But even though you weren't formally registered, you continued to do a lot of work during that time. You know, even the party even won two seats on a PKR ticket, I think, during that period. But can you share what you, as a party, you guys were working on in those 10 years?
Okay, in those 10 years, from 1998 to 2008, we just continued what we were doing as we were before. Because we were NGOs before, working with marginalized communities, and mainly with estate workers, fighting for housing for estate workers, fighting for a monthly wage. We are also working with the Peneroka Banda communities, the squatters, asking for housing rights. We also started working with farmers, vegetable farmers who are tilling government land or getting evicted. So that kind of work was already there in our NGO base, and that just continued. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we kept on building the party branches. We kept on... And we expanded into things like healthcare. In 2004, there was an attempt to start private pharmacies in government hospitals. And we managed to get a coalition of about 80 NGOs to kind of protest that. And so we formed a kind of a coalition against the healthcare privatization, where we worked with a lot of other NGOs, and then we were talking about things like, you know, there was an attempt to start private clinic in government hospitals, and we raised a lot of noise about that because we felt that would distract government doctors. We campaigned for more funding for government hospitals. So that became another side work, you know, that was a kind of a working on larger issues, not just the marginalized communities. Housing too became a major issue that we began looking at, you know, proper housing for people. Mm-hmm. These are the issues that we got involved in. We got involved in the free trade kind of agreements, you know, right. Because there's a lot of, at that time was the free trade with the US, which we were part of a group that protested that because we felt that was not beneficial to Malaysia. It will lead to more stronger patent rights, lead to higher costs of medicines. And so stuff like that. So it began in those 10 years, we moved from just marginalized communities to larger social and political issues involving the nation, mm-hmm. housing, healthcare, free education at varsity level, trade policy, and also environmental issues. So the party kind of grew in that way, you know, grew from just marginalized communities to larger issues.
Mm-hmm. And were you gaining more support from, you know, more people at that time as well?
Yes, but it is slow, you know, mm-hmm. because I think the current thinking in Malaysia, even up to now, is so much influenced by the race-based politicking taking place.
Sure.
So if you go on a race kind of a appeal, you get that particular racial group responding very strongly to you. When you go on a basis like ours, we're talking about affecting all the people, and, you know, it's across ethnic lines, more along, you know, socioeconomic lines, it doesn't get that much of a buy-in because I think, our thinking in Malaysia has been poisoned, you know, by 60 years of ethnic politicking. People think in those terms. So we're going against the tide by saying that we have to look out for the rights and the interests of everyone, including people who are not from our race itself. And that seems to go against the grain in the militia that we have developed, you know, because of the ethnic politicking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're still seeing it today, unfortunately. But after you guys were formally registered, of course, 2011, you know, that was when some really serious things happened. You know, the state clamped down very hard on PSM. More than 30 leading PSM activists were detained. And they also used the emergency ordinance to put 6 senior PSM leaders, yourself included, behind bars. And you were an MP at that time, too. Can you just remind us about what happened then?
No, those days, that was just before the Bursay, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it was Bursay 2. And I think it was basically a very cynical attempt to use the communist bogey to tarnish the name of the Bersih Organizing Committee and then so stop Bersih. Mm-hmm. And we were the very convenient fall guy, you know, to use us, the Party Socialists, and say that the Party Socialists is very close to the Bersih Committee, Organizing Committee, and Party Socialists is actually a communist plant in Malaysia. So there's that attempt to kind of tarnish us that way. But it actually backfired, you know, backfired on the government, partly because I think the party fought back. You know, most often when parties get attacked like this, they lie low. Those who are inside stay inside, those outside lie low and try and escape the net. But in this case, the party came out fighting, you know, and challenging the government and saying, what are you talking about? You know, you go to China, you go to Cuba, you sit with the major leaders. So what's wrong if we talk about them? So those kind of attacks. Huh? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I think people did not really buy that lie because, you know, I mean, even the special branch knew for the 15 years we've been around before that, you know, from 1994 to 2011, 17 years. You know what we were doing? We were mobilizing marginalized communities. We were fighting for their rights. We were trying to stop eviction, mm-hmm. Trying to highlight the issues. But never did we use violence, you know. There was never a case of violence. I mean, we got arrested, but that's for, you know, non-violent protest at eviction sites. So I think the government knew fully well, special branch knew fully well what we were, you know, that we were a party, a left party, but we were working within the ambits of the law. And they knew fully well. But so there's just a very cynical attempt to make use of us, the communist bogey, and to try and get to put people behind bars as well, you know. So that was what they're trying to do, but it failed. Mm-hmm. And I think partly because people of Malaysia just didn't buy it, you see. Became very unpopular and they had to release us. Mm-hmm.
And how was that time for you? I mean, I think that was the first time an MP had actually been detained under an EO like that in, you know, 60 years. And you spent a lot of time in it was more than 25 days, am I correct? Or about that?
Yeah, I was there for, under the EO 25 days, and under the earlier part was about the 7 days. No, I think MPs have been in before, you know, Operation Lalang, the MPs inside, but that's under ISA.
Yeah, it wasn't under the EO, is what I meant, yeah.
That's right. Well, it's very unpleasant, I must say.
Of course, of course.
You don't know what's going on, and you're not able to communicate, and you're held, you know, you can't talk to the other people who are in with you, you're in solitary confinement, and always there's a worry that, you know, they're going to clamp down on the whole party and on the whole democratic movement. Yes, it's very stressful. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very stressful because not sure when it's going to end. It's going to end. Are you going to end up in multiples of 2 years of detention? Yeah, so it wasn't pleasant at all, you know. Yeah. And I was so angry, you know, being held like that because you know fully well the police should be very clear that we are not a security threat. We are not a violent group. We never have been and we had never, you know, so they should have known. You know, but then you're doing this just for politics. I was really quite angry for the period.
Of course, understandably so. But I mean, you got through that and now more than two decades since its formation, PSM has actually lasted longer than, you know, all the earlier socialist parties. And correct me if I'm wrong, but grassroots work has always been at the cornerstone of your work, of PSM's work. What would you say are some of the core causes that PSM champions?
Okay, the thing about lasting longer than all earlier socialist parties is not really true, you know. The Parti Rakyat is still around.
Okay, and sorry.
You know, so they've been here for, about 65 years, really. Okay. They're still around. But yes, grassroots work has always been the cornerstone for PSM, and it still is, because it's a way for us to touch base, to find out what people are facing. And when you mobilize and you work with them, we really understand what's happening in the bottom 20% or 40% of the population. But we're also involved in so many other things. You know, over the years, we have matured. We've now, climate change is a major thing that we are interested in. We are involved in that. And we think it's a very important issue. There's a climate emergency going on. We wanted to make this our main campaign for last year. But then the COVID thing came along. So COVID became the main campaign. The campaign in the sense that we were arguing that we should make sure that everyone is not denied their basic needs during COVID, you know, housing, food, healthcare. Mm-hmm. And that became our focus. And we were trying to do things to kind of highlight that because COVID actually hits, COVID pandemic and the downturn hits people differentially. You know, I mean, like people who are salaried, for example, you know, in government sector, the pensioners, the income is not affected, you know, and people who are working in factories, again, you know, in the formal sector, again, the government did a lot of things to support wages in the formal sector. But it's the informal sector workers who are really badly affected, you know, the daily paid fellas, the people working in small stalls in, you know, coffee shops, and they are the ones who are really affected. So we wanted better support for them. And that's what we have been, and up to now, we're still advocating that, because the bottom 15% of families, I think, are really affected in terms of their basic needs, mm-hmm. you know. So anyway, so we went on to that COVID thing. We have been doing housing is another major issue that we are focusing on at present,
yeah.
because I think that affects so many people. And housing has become so commodified in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about it, you know, in the 60s and 70s, a person coming from rural area to work in an urban area, they would just go to a vacant land, vacant government land or vacant private land, former mining land, and build their own house with the help of their friends and families. Mm-hmm. They would not have to take a loan from a bank. That is not possible now. Now you have to get a loan, a house from a developer, and you've got to get a loan. It puts you into a debt for the next 20 years. And for families whose income is, you know, $2,000, $3,000 a month, a payment of $800 a month is a huge drain on them.
Yeah.
And actually, it impacts their capacity to provide proper meals and proper education for the next generation. So actually, the commodification of housing actually has marginalized the poorer people even further, because their meager incomes now have to be split towards housing as well. And otherwise, they lose their houses, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's something that we are fighting on now. It's a major issue, I think, in Malaysia. You know, it really kind of aggravates the inequalities in our society. So well, these are the other things we're involved in now. We're not only involved in the marginalized communities, but also involved in larger social issues.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you were elected to succeed, you know, Syed Nasir Hashim, and this was in 2019, you also pledged that you will go full steam ahead on climate change. And you've been alluding to that a lot, right? Why is that such an important aspect of PSM's work now?
Well, I think, you know, climate change is a reality. You know, there's global warming taking place, and it's going to affect, you know, food production. It's going to affect, you know, maybe ocean levels. It's going to affect climate. In terms of, you know, the storms we are seeing. And when these things happen, it will affect the poorest the most.
Yeah.
The richer people can relocate to a better place, but the poorest will have to stay where they are, and prices of food go up, again, it's the poorest who will have to be affected. So I think it's actually an existential crisis for mankind, you know, and I think we all should be serious about it.
Yeah.
So actually, we had in 2019 itself, we had some webinars, and those times were actually open meetings, and we had roundtable discussions, and we came out with a big climate change proposal, you know, how to go for a greener economy, how to cut down greenhouse gas emissions. And we were planning to push that for the whole of 2020. But because this COVID thing came along, that had to be postponed. But this year we are focusing on getting the government to declare a climate emergency. Mm-hmm. And to commit to come to carbon dioxide neutrality, that the amount that we are emitting in Malaysia is not more than the amount that we're able to absorb in Malaysia itself by 2025 or 2030 by the latest, which means cutting down on coal-generated electricity and, you know, cut down on private transport based on petrol. These are things that we are now again, and in all these things, we don't work as PSM alone. We kind of link out with other NGOs, try and form a larger network, because that helps to augment both our expertise as well as our reach. So we're working on these larger issues in coalitions with other groups,
mm-hmm.
you know, mainly NGOs and academicians and sometimes communities, and they're all part of a larger coalition. We're trying to push these things.
Okay. And I'm curious to know if you've seen an upsurge in people, and particularly young people's interest in socialism and, you know, I guess an alternative view of society. I mean, are you seeing that at all?
Yes, we're seeing that. A lot of young people are joining us. And it's not very surprising, you know. I think we are becoming a very unkind society to young people, you know. Mm. For young people now, first of all, education has become a commodity, and many of them end up with huge debts. You know, about 50% of our young now go to some kind of college for diploma or degree, and they come out with debts. The other thing that they face is, when they come out, they find that there are not enough good jobs. Mm. 50% of them are trained with a tertiary education. But in the market, only about 20% of the new jobs are jobs requiring a diploma or degree. We have much more of unskilled, semi-skilled jobs. So many of them, there's a kind of a underemployment, you know. They're forced to take on jobs which don't really meet up their qualifications, mm. you know, because the jobs are not there. So it's the other problem we face. So the jobs are not there and they don't earn as much because they're working on jobs that don't require the skills. And even those who are working in jobs that require a diploma or degree, it is an employer's market because there's so many of them available. So they cannot demand a higher. So their wages are quite suppressed. So high debt, suppressed wages. And the cost of accommodation has gone up. You know, even if you don't buy a house, you want to rent, you want a room now in KL with the speculation in land, you know, with the commodification of housing and the speculation in land. You know, housing used to be, you know, a need that was met. Now it's become an investment. Yeah. People buy, richer people tend to buy 2, 3 or more, you know, apartments and houses as an investment for the future. And in so doing, they promote the production, the building of even more high-end properties. And that drives up the value of land. So this again affects the young people, you know. Accommodation is a problem. They come to the city to work because that's where work is available. But then they find accommodation is high, the wages are low, they can't get jobs, you know. So I think if I'm a young person, I'll wonder what is going on. The country is becoming richer, our GDP is growing, our per capita is going up. But as a young person, I'm having more trouble than before, you know,
yeah.
than what my parents had. So, and I think it's linked to the fact that so much of the wealth of this society is going to the top 0.01%. You know, the billionaire class are getting so much. Things are being, like housing is being commodified, cost of living has gone up. And the people at the bottom, and now the young people are living in a society that's made them very precarious. Even if they get jobs, it's often contractual jobs. It's not jobs with any permanence. It's zero-hour contracts. If there's a job, you get it. The gig economy, mm-hmm. you know. So they are actually the young, actually, I mean, it's actually criminal, you know. I mean, we are now the richest and most productive society that mankind has seen. Yet we cannot share this wealth with our younger people. We can't share this wealth with the bottom 50% of the population. And you're pushing them into a very precarious, uncertain lifestyle. So for the way out for the young people actually is to join the Socialist Party, really, and question how is wealth, the wealth that we're creating, how is it being used? Shouldn't be used in a better way, you know? So I think there's no way really for young people. I mean, if they have insight into what's happening, they have to join us. They have to join the socialists. Maybe not our party, but they got to join a socialist, a kind of a party that questions the inordinate power that wealth has. The richest 0.1% have, the billionaires have, and restructure society in a way that is fair to more people.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And how do you see PSM, you know, itself playing a role in you know, helping the youth in building alliances with, you know, left, progressive and also democratic forces? You know, I mean, we're going to need everybody in this kind of fight, right?
Yes. No, I think PSM sees itself as a catalyst, as an enabler, and not necessarily the leader, you know?
Mm.
So we want to promote this kind of discussion, this kind of dialogue, this kind of awareness. And we would be happy to see other groups coming up, either NGOs or other political parties, so that it becomes a more national, a more wide-based kind of a progressive movement that basically puts people's interests before profits, that tries to say, look, there's too much of corporate control over the political process. That even now in Malaysia, we're not as bad as the US, but even in Malaysia, all the political parties get money from the big corporate groups.
Mm.
And we think that's wrong. We should push for public funding of the political process. And this is what the left movement has got to push for. Because once you publicly fund, then the political parties don't need to turn to the big businesses for money. And they get a bit weaned away from these big businesses.
Mm.
These are kind of things that the left has got to do. And we see our role not as the boss of the left, but as a friend, as an enabler, as a catalyst. And we would be happy to see more groups coming in. And maybe at some point along the line, we can form a progressive coalition, with a stronger electoral kind of a platform. And because ultimately we need to have power in the legislature to bring out the right policies, to bring out the right laws that protect people, protect the environment.
And, speaking of power in legislature, what is your current relationship with the current government? I mean, with Perikatan Nasional, how would you describe that?
Not much of a relationship, really. I mean, it's about the same as with the BN,
Uh-huh.
Because we need to contact them. We need to lobby with them. We got to talk to them about issues. But we're not pally-pally with them because we're not on the same page. So there's not that much of... You see, with the PH, it's a bit different because a lot of the PH people were activists who were with us in the various campaigns I talked about,
Mm.
So we had more of a personal relationship with the people, in Amana and people in PKR and DAP. We had more of a personal relationship. It was a bit different then, With the PN, it's back to the BN days, We don't really know these people. But we need to deal with them because they are in the position of power and we have to bring our issues up with them.
Okay.
So it's a kind of official kind of relationship.
Okay. All right. And I have to ask you this, but, how are you gearing towards, how is PSM gearing towards GE15? Are there some plans in place that you can share with us?
Well, I think GE15 is going to be a nightmare for the country as a whole. It's so complicated because it doesn't look like everyone seems to be just going for power. It seems to be, for us as a political party, we have to take part. I mean, there is... difficult for a political party not to take part. But it is going to be difficult to do well unless we are part of one of the coalitions. So we are exploring the possibility of having an electoral pact with the Pakatan Harapan. They were our former partners before. And we're exploring the thing of having an electoral pact with them. And we might have that if the terms are okay. But it's still being negotiated. It's going to be negotiated with the Pakatan. And the PSM is quite a democratic party. It's going to be negotiated within the PSM itself because there are some people in PSM who are fiercely independent who don't want us to compromise things and stuff. So it's still work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be taking part, perhaps as part of electoral pact with the PH, or if that doesn't work, we'll still be taking part as independents, which would be not very good electorally, but it's something we need to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so still a lot of planning going on, I suppose, right? We're not quite sure what's going to happen. It's like you said, it's going to be quite a messy GE, I think, coming up. But, GE 15 aside, what is PSM's plans for the next 10 years? I know you've been in discussions, as a party. What are your plans for the next 10 years?
Well, I think the next 10 years would be to grow the alternative, I mean, even now, people don't quite recognize that the PSM is a totally different from the existing parties, from the BN, the PN, the PH. People tend to see us as a more grassroots version of PH, or more hardworking, go to the ground and that kind of thing. But I think we are more than that. Our vision for society is different from PH. PH is still within the neoliberal fold. They identify corruption as the major issue in Malaysia and poor governance. And they say once corruption and poor governance is settled, everything will be fine. But I think PSM goes one step further. I mean, of course, corruption is the issue. Governance issues are there. But the other issue is the whole world, not only Malaysia, the whole world is under the sway of the top 0.01%, the billionaires. And they have structured the whole global economy in a way that puts a lot of countries in Asia and Africa in a negative position. I mean, for example, things like wage suppression. Our factory worker in Bayan Lepas will get about 1/6 or 1/8 of the wages of a same factory worker in California producing semiconductor parts. Mm. Same process, same number of parts per hour, yet our worker will get 1/8 the pay. That's not productivity. The World Bank will tell you it's because you're not productive and all that. They are not being honest with us. It's not productivity. It is the fact in which the global system, economic system, has been structured. So if you are a firm in America and you want to outsource your production, you allow a company in Malaysia, a businessman in Malaysia, and a businessman in Thailand, and a businessman in Vietnam, you give them the machines, give them the technology, and they produce, and you buy it back from them. And because they can only sell it to you, you can control their prices.
Yeah.
So you price it at 1/5 or 1/8 the price that you have to pay in America. And that's where you make tons of money from that. American workers lose jobs. Of course, Malaysian workers and Thai workers get jobs. But the wages would be so much lower. And if the Malaysian boss challenges the American guy and says, look, you know, why are you paying me so low? I want a bit more. The American company will say, look, I can go to Thailand. Either you give it to me at the rate I'm asking you, or I'm going to... And the Malaysian boss has built his company, has built his thing. He's now dependent on this. He's a cog in the global chain. He's dependent on the global chain. He cannot say, okay, I'm going to sell it to Korea or South Korea or Taiwan because it's a different part. And anyway, it may be protected by patents and all that. So he's tied into this global chain.
Mm.
Now, this is the kind of thing that the Pakatan and the BN don't look at it enough. This kind of structural imbalances where the countries, or the so-called developed countries, are still gaining from this, what I call wage suppression. That means Malaysian workers work, and a lot of their wealth, a lot of what they produce, is not given to them as wages, but it is taken as cheap inputs into Western products or products of MNCs, which are then sold back at high prices.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of awareness, and then the fact that we need to challenge and change the kind of free trade agreements that are going on, that's not seen. I think the DAP and the PKR don't recognize that. So the problem, so we recognize those kind of things. So I think we are more than just a hardworking version of the PH. More grassroots working. No, we are not. We are that, yes, we are hardworking, we are grassroots, but we also have a different vision, a different analysis. And for us, handling corruption alone isn't sufficient. Of course, you've got to handle corruption, you've got to have better governance. Yes, all that is true. But we also got to work in the longer run on recalibrating the global economic structure. And that we can't do alone. We've got to do it with the group of 77, we got to do it to ASEAN. We got to, in ASEAN, for example, we got to talk among our people in ASEAN and say, let's stop this race to the bottom. We're all cutting corporate taxes because we want to get FDI in. When you cut corporate taxes, then the money you have available for social welfare programs, of course, are limited. We got to do those kinds of things. That awareness is not there in the other parties. And the general public don't recognize that we have these other dimensions.
Mm.
So I think the next 10 years, we got to try to tell people, look, our vision is a bit different from the vision of the BN and the vision of the PN and the vision of the Pakatan. We see there's a need to recalibrate the global economic system. We got to rein in the power of the billionaire class, you know, those kinds of things. Huh? We got to, so that we become a movement that people can say, yes, they're different. Not just that they're, you know, a part of the PH, mm-hmm. but they're a different political kind of tradition. And you got to build that movement into something that can have real clout in our parliament and in our state assemblies. So that's what I think our vision would be for the next 10 years. to build the left, not only build PSM, but it can be outside the PSM as well, but to build a progressive movement that is for the 99%, that's for people, for profits. That'll be our vision for the next 10 years.
That is an amazing vision, Dr. Jayakumar. And I think, you know, especially after going through 2020, the 99% of us do know that there's a severe revamp is in order. So we wish you well. And, you know, if anyone is interested to find out more about the work that you do, I guess the best thing to do is head to the website, partysocialist.org.
Yes. Okay. And we also got a YouTube kind of site as well. Yes, please.
Okay. All right. So thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Jayakumar.
Thank you, Juliet. Thank you so much.
I've been speaking to Dr. Jayakumar Devaraj, who's the chairperson of Party Socialist Malaysia, and he's also the former two-term MP of Sungai Siput. And we were discussing, well, the past, the present, and also the future of Party Socialist Malaysia. Again, if you'd like to find out more, just head to partysocialist.org. That's partisocialist.org, or follow them on their social media pages. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can head to bfm.my/learn or just find it on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.